Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe, Ian Aker, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today, Randall Martin speaks with Tanya Jackson about Operation Unite and the fundraiser for the Alan Skerritt Scholarship. And we'll hear from Joel Berg of Hunger Free America about New York hunger problems, plus the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather and the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the news. This is the network, network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
Hi everyone, this is Johnny Cowsey from the Door Foundation. You're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Keep it locked.
Wave Farms Art Park is now open on Saturdays. Drop in for unannounced guided tours on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m. or book a tour in advance on other days. Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Accra is the home of the art park with 13 installations in the Study Center, WGXC Accra Studio, the Wave Farms International Artist Residency Program. Visitors on Saturdays receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free and tours typically last 60 to 90 minutes. Again, on Saturdays, Wave Farms Art Park is open for drop-in visits anytime from noon to 6 p.m. from June through October. Stop by Wave Farm on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jeff Economy of Kingston, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC Daily News for Thursday, July 27th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Mid-Hudson News reports that the Saugerties Town Board placed Town Police Chief Joseph Sinagra on paid administrative leave on July 26th, but did not say why. Sinagra has been the Saugerties Police Chief since 2012 and was recently sworn in as president of the New York State Association of Police Chiefs. But the town board held an emergency meeting on July 26th that was not publicly posted at least 24 hours in advance to remove Sinagra. Instead, former Saugerties Police Chief Lou Barbaria agreed to lead the department on an interim basis for $50 an hour. Barbaria was chief when the town and village of Saugerties Police Departments merged in 2012. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. Jamal Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that the city of Hudson wants to replace the water lines on Robinson Street and North 3rd Street. So they are applying for funds from the New York State Water Infrastructure Improvement Act to cover part of the expected $1,026,260 cost. The city of Hudson Department of Public Works says the water mains were last replaced in the early 1900s. Department of Public Works Superintendent Rob Perry said, quote, "We are an old city with an old architecture and old infrastructure," unquote, Perry said. Many of the water mains are over 100 years old, made of cast iron. In this project, we would replace the existing 4-inch water main that most certainly has mineral buildup or tuberculation, which further restricts flow. Also, the cast iron degrades over time, making it more prone to breaks, unquote. The city is preparing its grant application for the August 14th deadline, and then we'll wait for Governor Kathy Hochul to announce the winners in December. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul is still stumping for more affordable housing in the state after the legislature passed on her plan to build 800,000 new units in the next decade. Hochul said, quote, "We must build more housing, and then you continue building the buildings and working on the public infrastructure projects, and people who always think about us continue to talk about us in that sense of awe," unquote. This month, Hochul took executive action to support money for local governments and create more development-friendly rules. Hochul said, quote, "The more we build and we talk about an affordability crisis, not just here, but every corner of the state, if we build more housing, all levels, I didn't say it had to all be affordable. I never said that. Just build more housing, all kinds, everywhere, and then we'll be able to start driving down the price because my highest priorities for the state are, number one, public safety, and we're making great progress here," unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, July 27th. Local early morning temperatures range from 67 degrees in Tannersville to 74 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 74 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be low and air quality will be moderate. Smoke levels will be around zero. According to the National Weather Service, a heat advisory is in effect today from 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. for the Mid-Hudson Valley, Southern Taconics, and Litchfield County. Slight to marginal risk of severe thunderstorms and flash flooding. If you have been listening to me, you know what to do. Time to execute. If not, you can find plenty of tips from the Better Weather Telegram channel, the National Weather Service, and health.ny.gov. That last one has a map of cooling centers available if need be. It gets hot today, but first, rain. It starts for some around 8 a.m., hits for most by the afternoon. Stormy conditions will settle in. The sky will be lit with lightning for a bit. A high of 90 degrees happens at 3 p.m. Rain ends around dark. Overnight, the dew point to muggy conditions and a low of 71 degrees. Tomorrow, hot, humid. No rain currently expected, a high of 92, muggy overnight with a low of 70 degrees. Saturday, rainy with a high of 85. Overnight should be naturally comfortable, hitting 60 degrees. Sunday, probably dry with a high of 80. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 5:14 a.m., high tide at 10:06 a.m., low tide again at 5 o'clock p.m., and high tide once again at 10:49 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 76 degrees, and the tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 8:07 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:40 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 5%. Plasma winds will be average at 464 kilometers per second, with a thin density of 3 protons per cubic centimeter. Long-range radio propagation conditions are currently terrible, verging on closed. Check back tomorrow. There are no chances of aurora tonight, and the current sunspot number is 147. This has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
If it's not De La Slow, then it's not WRMS. We're cats in control, twisting and tuning until you're perfectly content. Special cat call goes out to the suckers at the donut shop. Thanks for serving it to me. Dark, hot, and no caffeine. Snuggle tight and hang loose, boys. It's time to groove to a De La Slow move on WRMS.
What else should I be? All apologies. What else should I say? Everyone is gay. What else could I write? I don't have. Should I?
buried, buried. I wish I was like you, easily amused. Find my nest of salt, everything's my fault. Blame, aquacy, foam, shame, sunburn with freezer burn, choking on the ashes of her enemy. In the sun, I feel as one. In the sun, in the sun. Married, buried, buried. All in all is all we all are. All in all is all we all are. All in all is all we all are. All in all is all.
I'm singing this song for my sister Sinead, concerning the god-awful mess that she made when she told him her truth just as hard as she could. Her message profoundly was misunderstood. There's humans entrusted with guarding our gold, and humans in charge of the saving of souls. And humans responded all over the world, condemning that bald-headed brave little girl. And maybe she's crazy and maybe she ain't, but so was Picasso and so were the saints. And she's never been partial to shackles or chains. She's too old for breaking and too young to tame. It's asking for trouble to stick out your neck in terms of a target, a big silhouette. But some candles flicker and some candles fade, and some burn as true as my sister Sinead. And maybe she's crazy and maybe she ain't, but so was Picasso and so were the saints. And she's never been partial to shackles or chains. She's too old for breaking and too young to tame.
Took your love away. Oh, 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 oh. nothing.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Again, in the national security vein, is it possible that these UAPs would be probing our capabilities? Yes or no, Mr. Graves?
Yes.
Rush?
Yes.
Fravor?
Definitely.
Republican Tennessee Representative Andy Ogles questioned three former defense officials on whether unidentified anomalous phenomena could potentially pose national security risks, and all answered yes. A 2021 Pentagon report laid out 140 inexplicable encounters. Shortly after starting a news conference on Wednesday to discuss the national defense bill, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell was escorted away by members of his leadership team after freezing mid-sentence and not uttering another word for close to 20 seconds.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. We're on a path to finishing the NDAA this week. It's been good bipartisan cooperation and a string of...
The incident sparked new speculation about the 81-year-old's health. He has been the Senate GOP leader since 2007. The Federal Reserve announced a quarter-point interest rate hike Wednesday, putting interest rates at a 22-year high. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said the Fed will continue to take a data-dependent approach to future monetary policy decisions.
We are continuing to reduce our securities holdings at a brisk pace. We've covered a lot of ground, and the full effects of our tightening have yet to be felt.
Earlier this week, Texas Democratic Representative Greg Casar participated in a thirst strike at the Capitol to protest Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who signed a bill stripping mandatory water breaks for construction workers.
People have died because they haven't been let off of a scaffold, and they've been left up there without being able to get a drink of water. People have gotten sick in 100, 105, 120 degree temperatures.
Casar argues the law isn't specific enough and allows employers to get away with not giving water breaks. Arizona Democratic Representative Patty Contreras was among those touring Maricopa County area cooling centers and is calling for the immediate passage of the Extreme Heat Emergency Act, which would add extreme heat to the Federal Emergency Management Agency's list of major disasters.
This would allow Governor Hobbs to declare this unprecedented heat a major disaster and provide funding to help mitigate this emergency.
Finally, the Department of Transportation announced a rule Wednesday to make bathrooms more accessible on airplanes. The DOT said this rulemaking requires airlines to make lavatories on new single-aisle aircraft large enough to permit a passenger with a disability and an attendant to approach, enter, and maneuver as necessary. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our Atros indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. If you voted in the midterms by absentee ballot in Florida last year, your automatic request, along with millions of others, may no longer be valid for 2024 due to a new law requiring that absentee ballot requests expire in 2 years rather than four. WUSF reports that Hillsborough County alone sent out over 339,000 absentee ballots in 2022, but it has only 71,000 active requests left. Widely considered a voter suppression bill, SB 90 was passed in 2021 by the Florida legislature and signed by Governor Ron DeSantis. While it was termed an election integrity change, its timing followed a 2020 election where 4.2 million Floridians voted by mail and Democrats cast 680,000 more mail ballots than Republicans. The National Conference of State Legislatures identifies 8 states plus D.C. which offer some form of permanent absentee list for any voter, while at least 13 states offer permanent absentee lists for the disabled and seniors. Florida is not among them. Voters are now forced to renew their request through their county elections office or webpage. SB 90 also requires a state ID or Social Security information and no other option, a burdensome requirement for many voters. We have a directory of Florida county election offices and their websites at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
And now we're going to learn a lot about a local event that's coming up in a couple of weeks from a great organization, HCHC, the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition. And and on the line here is Tanya Jackson, the executive director, and we're going to talk a little bit about what they're doing and this great new event that is coming up. How you doing, Tanya?
I'm doing very well. Doing very well. How's the sound around me? Is it too much traffic from the street? Or is it okay?
No. You sound good. You sound clear. Now okay. You're right there. You're right there on Fifth Street.
Awesome. Yeah, we're on Fifth and State.
Yeah, right in the heart of Hudson. So yeah, you guys are doing great and amazing work over there in advocacy, in housing, and in community building. And I'll let you tell. You're the new executive director. Tell me kind of what's going on, what the direction is. You know, kind of catch me up.
Well, I'm like 3 months old in this job position. I stepped in for Claire Cousin, who was the previous executive director. Of the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition, which is a evolution out of the Staley B. Keith community organization that was around for about 12 years prior. Mm-hmm. And so HCHC was formalized in 2020 with Claire Cousin as the who stepped into the executive. I think Quentin was initially, and then Queer stepped into the role.
Gotcha.
And Queer will be that. Claire stepped down to run for assembly, so she is running for assembly. I'm very excited about that.
Yes.
And so I was asked to come on end of last year, and I officially started in April of this year.
Now, you do so much. You know, you're always so busy in between your Juneteenth exhibits, all the work you do with your brother Loki, all the other community. I think there's Daughters of the Diaspora. I mean, you're all over the place, always doing great community work. And again, I want to commend you on your community. In my mind, I want to call them community remembrance pieces, where you gave sort of dedications to people and institutions from the history, for the history and Black culture of Hudson and the county.
Yeah, actually, this past Sunday was the kind of official closeout of the Juneteenth. Historical remembering project. Mm-hmm. We did a tour, first of its kind that I know of, a free tour for the community around Black history. Mm-hmm. And it was connecting history in Hudson to Black history in Germantown, which is about 15, 20 minutes outside of Hudson. And it was a piece of the history that was centered in the exhibit this year that I talked about last time I was on your show. And what we did was to bring that history to life. We organized a tour with archaeologists and historians who mm-hmm. work with or at the Parsonage in Germantown, where the history of ancestors who enslaved there is kept.
Yes.
And there is a Friends of Historic Germantown is what the group is called, that is working to preserve that history in Germantown in partnership with Bard College. And so the archaeologist who spearheaded the excavations that found this history, he plus Ethan Dickerson, who's also an archaeologist and historian, and then Tom, I forget Tom's last name, but he's the historian on site who does the tours there. So we all got together, predominantly Ethan and I got together to plan out a tour, you know, because when I met them last year, they were just asking how to, you know, ways to like bring the community out there and make sure people know about it, like, you know, they really want to activate it. And so I'm really happy a year later this year, this past Sunday, we were able to do that. And in the what they found is that the ancestor that they've been tracing this history through, her end of life was in Hudson. And she is connected to some of the ancestors and elders that folks know here, namely John and Adeline Tucker, who were members of AME Zion Church.
Okay.
And then Miss Rayner, who was a member of Shiloh Church, and there's a house at 433 State Street that is that is on the historical registry. No, it's not, but it should be. There is a house that's still been in this family for generations now. That's about a block from where I'm at the HCHC office. So yeah, I'm really happy that element. It's a new element for us, but was able to bring that in this year. We had a van full of about 15 Black folks from the community came out. So it was a good turnout and did a 2-hour tour of different stops between Hudson and Germantown. It was really nice.
Well, you know, the reason why I say it's so important is that it gives a context for people to understand everyone, but especially Black community, like your place in the community has been here. And Black people have been a part of Columbia County for centuries. And this is not a new development. And that many and most of the homeowners many, many years ago, these were homeowners, not just renters. And people came here to Columbia County in various ways. Obviously, there was a southern migration, but there was also in the areas of Kinderhook where people were enslaved and brought there. And, you know, it is.
People were enslaved throughout the county, including Hudson. Every township in this county has some history with enslavement because this county was colonized by the Dutch settlers and the British, who they had their, you know, back and forth there, you know, being allies and then being enemies.
Right.
During those early years of colonization and enslavement. And so Columbia County had cotton mills. So cotton was shipped up from the South up here. So all of these histories are interrelated in some way. And the enslavement in New York is known, but Columbia County also. So there was enslavement in Hudson, it was enslavement in Kinderhook. Everywhere, Germantown is just Hillsdale, Clavrat.
I didn't know that.
All of these townships have had a history of enslavement and building its infrastructures through free labor.
I didn't know that. I didn't know about Hudson. I knew about Kinderhook. I knew about Germantown. And as you properly point out, that either from the White House to all these local hamlets, so many of the buildings, the county buildings, the institutional buildings, the big buildings with columns and, you know, ornately done, were built with slave labor. And, you know, and so it bears
the roads, the sewer systems, the railroads, the boating.
It bears remembrance when you're trying to figure out your place, especially in an era of gentrification where you can come to this town and feel not welcome, you know, in your own town. And you think, well, wait a minute, my ancestors helped build this town that you're driving on. And that, you know, so I digress, but it is important to have that sort of institutional memory kept alive.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And I'll say about you mentioned ownership, the ancestors in Germantown after fighting for their freedom in the state of New York, finally, after doing all of this gradual emancipation, really, really messed up, and really breaking of families, ways that they were instituting so-called abolition here, they would have this gradual emancipation process in which they would have, and they kept switching them. The laws kept switching, but by 1827 is when, on at least on the books, they made slavery illegal, but it also took away voting rights of free Black people. So there are all of these things that are just interwoven with this. But one of the things that is a highlight is that after legal slavery was ended, those same ancestors in Germantown bought the parsonage in which they were enslaved, and then a whole Black community formed around them. And it was there was a vibrant Black community that was in Germantown in the let's say between like the 1830s till 1911. And then this particular ancestor, Emma, at her end of life, she was the last person to like live there. She moves in with her friend John Tucker, who becomes her home health aide at the end of her life.
Wow.
And this house on State Street is where the Tuckers have this history of helping people in a community, and this house being something that is still owned by the family and demonstrates and documents, and is still here for people to understand, you know, this lineage of how Black folks have been saving each other by supporting each other and taking each other in and helping each other build. So, yeah.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking with Joel Berg, who is the director of Hunger Free America, one of the lead-in anti-hunger groups, both in New York City, New York State, but also nationally. So, Joel, why don't you give us a brief introduction to Hunger Free America, and how is the effort to end hunger going these days?
Thanks, Mark. Hunger Free America is headquartered in New York City, but we work throughout New York State and the nation to help create the policies and programs necessary to end hunger in America. We're different than many hunger groups because we're seeking to entirely end U.S. hunger, not just ameliorate it, end it. And because we're addressing its root causes, including unpopular issues like low wages. And we also directly enabling struggling New Yorkers and Americans to access healthy food through cost-effectively leveraging government nutrition assistance programs like SNAP and WIC. Hunger Free America is doing good work, and other hunger groups are as well, but unfortunately we're falling backwards in the fight against hunger, basically because our public policy is falling backwards. During the pandemic, as horrible as the dislocation was, we had a dramatic increase in the SNAP program that used to be called the food stamp program, a significant increase in WIC for pregnant women and children under 5. We made it much easier for kids to get free school meals across the country. And after an initial huge spike during the pandemic and the job loss, hunger started going down. Now that those things have been taken away, hunger's gone up. We shouldn't be shocked. If there's a drought and you add water, there's less drought. And if you take away water, there's more drought. When there's a hunger crisis and you take away food and money to buy food, there's more hunger. Right now in New York, about 2 million people statewide suffer from food insecurity, unable to afford enough food.
Now, one of the things that was somewhat impressive was during the recent state budget, in fact, I guess several hundred million dollars was allocated to continue some of the universal school meals programs that were started during COVID, though that seemed to be more of a legislative initiative rather than, you know, something that the Governor Hochul herself sort of took the leadership on. Are there, you know, more things the state should be doing at this point to, you know, try to alleviate hunger?
Yes, building on that, the state really needs to focus on school breakfast, because in New York City, at least half the kids who get school lunch don't get school breakfast. And a lot of other parts of the state, they have a similar low breakfast participation rates. We really need a serious plan at the state level to increase participation in SNAP, it used to be called food stamps, and WIC. We have a very, 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 very wealthy, uncle named Sam, originally, at least theoretically, from Troy, New York, Uncle Sam Wilson, but Uncle Sam today has deep, deep, deep pockets, and we are not utilizing those deep pockets. 37% of the working poor in New York eligible for SNAP aren't getting it. 27% of the seniors eligible aren't getting it. Even though WIC is available to many of the migrants coming in, about half of the children in the state eligible for WIC benefits fail to receive them. And about half the state's children, as I said, that receive school lunches fail to receive school breakfast. So the top thing the state can do is simply increase participation in the federally funded programs. That's smart fiscally. It's smart from a social justice standpoint.
Now, when I worked at the Hunger Action Network, one of our big challenges was to get local Department of Social Services, HRA in New York City, to, really make sure that food stamp benefits, now SNAP, go to the people who are eligible. And I know the state and the feds have put a lot of money into trying to increase outreach, but are households who are eligible for SNAP benefits and other benefits like WIC, are they actually able to access these benefits in a timely fashion?
Unfortunately, no. New York City and many parts of the state are falling way behind. Federal law says that the state is supposed to determine whether someone's eligible for this food within 30 days of applying. And that requirement goes back to 1977, when there was no internet, no email. County and state social service offices were literally manually processing and communicating about these applications. Today, you should be able to get benefits within one day. And yet, many parts of the state are more than half the time missing even that 30-day deadline. And it just shows how little the powers that be cares about the needs of low-income people. That's why we have, part of that's understaffing at the state and county level. Part of that is that there is extraordinarily antiquated technology used by the state and not empowering low-income people to use technology. So one of our top public policy pushes at the federal level, at the state level, at the local level, is to automate applications for food programs, combine that with applications for things like home energy assistance, if there's any help weatherizing homes or taking green steps to save money, but also protect the environment. All those applications should be combined, and we would need fewer employees to fill out these forms and more easily get people to help.
Now, one of the largest federal laws comes up every 5 years is the Farm Bill. And that's supposed to be how we sort of structure the food system, how we help farmers. A lot of complaints, it's way too supportive of corporate agriculture and not supportive of sustainable, but particularly also not supportive of fruits and vegetables. But the other half of it is funding for the SNAP program and others. Now, this is the year, I believe, that the Farm Bill is supposed to be reauthorized. Sort of two-part question, what are some of the changes, anti-hunger groups want to see? And given the partisan divide in Congress, is it likely they're going to take action?
So two-part answer. We would love to see making it easier for people to get SNAP, and as well as increasing the number of immigrants and working people eligible for SNAP, and also making sure that we raise the purchasing power in the program to enable people to buy healthier food. Some people think that low-income people purposely don't want to buy healthier food, so they have to be punished in some way. We know that low-income people desperately want healthier food, and they need more purchasing power in SNAP to be able to do that. However, the real fight this year, honestly, isn't going to be how we get these improvements, but how we beat back the far-right mega Republicans' attempts to take food out of the mouths of hungry children. And I don't say that lightly. They're proposing cutting the WIC program, which funds pregnant women and children under five and has prevented a few hundred thousand babies from dying at birth. While WIC isn't in the farm bill, they're still trying to cut it in other ways in an off year, even though it's the most pro-life program that's ever existed in American history. So I have doubts whether there's even going to be a farm bill this year, because I have doubts whether Kevin McCarthy can pass through the House a bill that doesn't ravish programs that aid the most impoverished of Americans. And such a bill will not pass the U.S. Senate, will not be signed into law by President Biden. So we are a nonpartisan group. We don't take sides in elections. We don't tell people which party to vote for. But the truth is, just based on a factual, not a partisan basis, it is the Republicans now who are trying to rip apart the bipartisan consensus that helped us in previous decades reduce hunger in America. And if they succeed, we will have dramatically more hunger, including child hunger in this country and the state.
So a little bit, about 90 seconds left. I'll end with a two-part question. You mentioned before you also work to try to eliminate the root causes of hunger. What are some of the key initiatives at this point? And if people want more information about Hunger Free America, get a website.
Sure. Our website is hungerfreeamerica.org. That's hungerfreeamerica.org. If any of your listeners need food, they can call the National Hunger Hotline, which we run on behalf of USDA. You can call 1-866-3-HUNGRY. That's 1-866-3-HUNGRY. And to reduce poverty, we need to raise wages. We need to raise the state minimum wage beyond what the legislature agreed to. We need the governor to end the subminimum wage for tip workers. Many tip workers in New York don't even get the $15 minimum wage. That's outrageous. And we need to help low-income people save money to exit out of poverty. We need to help them buy homes, start businesses, save money for retirement, pay for education. The biggest difference between wealthy and non-hungry people and poor and hungry people is wealthy people own things and earn interest. Low-income people, hungry people owe interest and pay interest, and we need to change policy to move from owing to owning to help reduce poverty and hunger.
We've been talking with Joel Berg, Hunger Free America, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that the Town of Athens Zoning Board of Appeals has rejected Freepoint Solar's request for a variance to build a 43.4-acre solar farm on Potic Mountain in an area zoned residential. Athens resident Margaret Munkle was part of a group opposing the project, and she said, and I quote, "It's good for Athens. It's good for everybody. Trees should not be killed to save the world. We can find better ways of protecting the environment and not hurt the environment at the same time," end quote. The board, though, had given the proposal a negative declaration under the State Environmental Quality Review, and Peter Ford, managing director of Freepoint Solar, said they would appeal the decision. The zoning board previously ruled against Freepoint in September 2021. Then a court directed the Athens board to consider the variance application under the public utility standard as established by the case Con Edison Company of New York versus Hoffman. In June, the town board passed a six-month moratorium on all solar applications. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Andrea Mako reports in Porcupine Soup that heavy storms caused flash floodings in Haines Falls in Greene County July 5th. The flash flooding stranded multiple people in Catterskill Creek and shut down Route 23A for several hours. Two people were rescued from hanging on between boulders in rapid waters at Fawns Lee, and several others were also reported trapped by the flood. WTEN reported that 16 individuals were rescued after the flooding began. The Greene County Sheriff's Officer Water Rescue Team, New York State Forest Rangers, Town of Hunter Police, New York State Police, the Hunter County Sheriff's Water Rescue Team, and the Twin Cloves Rescue Team all responded to the emergency. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. News 10 in Albany reports that the Aldi grocery store is closing in the city of Rensselaer, and officials there are complaining that they now live in a food desert. The Aldi store is closing there on July 26 and is opening a new location in North Greenbush on July 27. Mayor Michael Stammel is worried about how some of his residents will buy food now, saying, and I quote, "We have a couple of housing projects here for low and moderate income people, plus senior buildings, and those are the ones who use these buildings the most, as well as the people who walk here on a regular basis. So transportation, that's something that's going to be another part of their budget. It's going to take away money they could use somewhere else," end quote. In June, the Rensselaer County Legislature passed a resolution asking Aldi to remain in the city, saying, and I quote, "There have been concerns in the community that Aldi may close the Rensselaer location and create a virtual food desert for those who rely on the convenient location of the store," end quote. Read more about this story at the News 10 website. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
New York's appellate court has ordered that the state's congressional maps be redrawn. The bipartisan state commission will start work immediately. After the 2020 census, the commission didn't agree on a new map, leading to a lengthy legal challenge. It ended with a state court judge overseeing the new map's redrawing process for the 2022 elections. But in this case, Democrats are arguing the special master's maps were only meant to be used for the 2022 election, not for the next decade. Jerry Goldfeder with the New York State Bar Association notes this is all part of the process.
Often, what happens, not just in New York, but throughout the country, is that when new lines are promulgated, there are sometimes people who are unhappy with those new lines, and they challenge them, and courts have to deal with it. And that's a litigation process.
This comes as the U.S. Supreme Court recently ruled Alabama's district maps were unconstitutional for some districts with a majority of black voters. Once the new lines are redrawn, they will be submitted to the legislature for approval unless a legal challenge comes forward. The goal is to resolve this process by late February to prepare for the upcoming primaries and election. There are concerns the new maps might tip the scale of power in favor of Democrats in the 2024 election. Goldfeder describes the legal criterion these maps have to meet.
They can't be partisan to such a degree that violates the state constitution. They can't favor incumbents or insurgents. And so whatever new lines we get will undoubtedly be more or less neutral.
He adds the political leaning of these districts will come down to the voters' choice. In recent years, confidence in elections has waned. Experts feel a divide in election confidence comes down to political parties. They feel Democrats worry about voting access while Republicans worry about election integrity. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Here's your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, the National Weather Service in Albany is issuing a heat advisory for the WGXC listening area, which will be in effect from noon to 7 p.m. There will be a chance of showers before 11 a.m., then a chance of showers and thunderstorms between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., then showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 2 p.m., and some of those storms could produce small hail and gusty winds. It will be partly sunny and hot with a temperature high near 92 degrees and heat index values as high as 96 degrees. On Thursday night, there will be a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly before 11 p.m. It will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 70 degrees. And on Friday, a slight chance of showers between 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. It will be sunny and hot with a temperature high near 93 degrees. And Friday night, a slight chance of thunderstorms, then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 8 p.m. It will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 70 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears. In green, and Columbia counties.
From 2008, this is the Felice Brothers from Ulster County in Palinville. This is their radio song on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
imagine all the blue skies blue. Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Whoa, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be lost.